I'm Sydney.
And I'm Julie.
And this is Restaurant and Retail Revelations. Welcome to Restaurant and Retail Revelations, a podcast made possible by Revel Systems, the leading open cloud order management platform on the market. As the name suggests, this podcast spotlights key players in the restaurant and retail industries.
In this episode, we're sitting down with Revel's Chief Strategy Officer, Chris Libier, and we'll be exploring the ongoing evolution of hospitality technology, along with different approaches to that technology and how merchants can apply it to their operational needs.
Chris has built a career in the space of restaurant and retail tech, and I know Julie and I are both eager to hear his perspective on these topics. Keep listening for his insights. Chris, it's been a while since we featured you on Restaurant and Retail Revelations, so welcome back to the podcast guest seat.
Thank you. I am thrilled to be here.
So Julie and I are always excited to chat with you, but today we're especially eager to talk with you just to take an introspective look around the ever-evolving space of order management technology and the approaches merchants can take when building the tech stack that they need to actually execute those operations. So the first question that I'd like to start with for some context, our listeners may not know this, but you've actually been close to restaurant technology for quite some time, and you've witnessed some pivotal moments in the industry. So I'd love just to get your take on your background and kind of how you started this journey.
Oh boy. Thanks for opening that door, Sydney. But yeah, I'll try to do it as quickly as possible, but I do think it's relevant because I think we're at a unique point in time. So I have been developing restaurant systems actually since the 1980s. And in the 80s, the first thing that happened is we went from mechanical systems to computer systems. So they were much more, you know, they really moved from fancy calculators to something that was much more capable of managing checks and doing sophisticated things. And that was really awesome. So in the 90s and, you know, through the first decade of 2000 and 2010 to 20, those were the prevalent systems of the day, kind of the first generation of, you know, full computerized, either, you know, PC or tablet cloud-based systems that ran restaurants. The thing I will note through that period of time is that the way that restaurants themselves ran was not significantly different throughout those periods of time. You had very well-defined segments, like, you know, you went someplace to sit down at a table and eat. There was drive-throughs off the interstate. You know, so there was some segmentation, but it was really kind of just a couple of buckets like that. Even until it's only been the last 5-8 years, we've had the concept of fast casual and sort of the different versions of that. There was just not as much flexibility, right? It was one or the other. You know, maybe the walk-up stand to get a pretzel, et cetera, and, you know, the mall food court kind of thing. But that was about it. So the systems tracked the way the, you know, the market worked over that time. And in fact, there was a long run of years where there was really only a couple major prevalent systems. And that's because they got so good at doing those things. It was a huge barrier to entry for anybody else to get in. And therefore, they owned the market for a long period of time. And that was the Aloha system and the Micro system. But what is happening now is something completely different. Everything has changed for restaurants. Their costs are going up astronomically, faster than ever in history, across the board, labor, real estate, food costs. The pandemic created a set of consumers who want to engage with them in a whole different way through different ordering channels. And in fact, now almost any restaurant rooftop is doing some combination of the former things, right? They might be a table serve place that's now got people picking up food. They might have cut a drive-through window in, you know, all around versions of fast casual, different kinds of day parts with different kinds of capabilities. So restaurants are really doing everything they can to maximize their revenue, but they're now running multiple types of restaurants under that same rooftop. So the complexity of the technology that's needed is huge. And besides the complexity that's there today, there's so much new tech coming to market with AI and vision and voice and all this other stuff that it's just pouring in to the restaurants in a way that's going to help them, but that is a lot to manage. So we had a very static run for a long time where it was, you know, pretty much the same from 1990 to 2015, even pushing up to 2020. Now we're in a new world order, and I think we're still in the chaos of sorting that out. Technology can do a lot of great things, but you also have to be able to harness this complexity and manage through all of that to make it work. And I think we're still a bit in that stage.
Yeah, you shared a lot of good proof points about the fact that we can all agree that order management software has, and everything that comes along with it, has changed a lot in the past 20 years and is potentially only accelerating, I think. So I'd love to hear, Chris, your perspective. And I think you shared a few of these truths in your first answer, but on the most pivotal moments for the industry, really, since you've been a part of it.
Yeah, well, it'd be hard. Maybe it's a recency effect, but it'd be hard not to, you know, point out the pandemic is the thing that forced change, right? It forced everything. There was no choice. I'll still never forget in the several months after March of 2020, our company did almost nothing but help people install online ordering who had not had it installed before. Now, there were plenty of people who had it installed before, but it was the vast minority of the market, and it quickly had to become the majority of the market. So there was a forcing function there. And we're still, you know, it just, consumers were headed that way anyway. It just happened all a lot faster. If there was another moment I had to pick, I'd go back to the internet bubble time, which was right around the year 2000. Remember everybody, we went through Y2K, and then the internet became a thing that we all used every day that had a lot of power and people got used to. And that did expose a lot of new capabilities, right? You couldn't do online ordering without the internet, you know, a lot of other things that you can now do in restaurants. So that definitely brought the game up, but I think it was a much more gradual situation of usage through, you know, from 2000 until 2020. And I think the pandemic, though, just put everything. It's just like they stepped on the gas and we're now going 85 miles per hour in a 70 mile per hour zone with technology.
And before we really jump into just how brands can make sense of all of their new options today and how they can kind of keep these disparate ordering channels and macro, you know, pressures and in a place that's manageable, I do want to take a final step down memory lane. I just want to know, like, what is the first major innovation that you remember bringing to market for restaurant and retail tech?
I can go all the way back far enough. It was actually in the 80s that I actually had the patent for the first electronic journal, which all that meant was we were saving the transactions electronically and then allowing you to go back and look at them. That concept didn't exist before that. Remember, when you were in mechanical, it was just a glorified calculator and you got a total. Then when we got to computers, you now had a printer and you ran the transaction, you got a receipt, but the receipt was your source of the truth at that point in time. And in the next few years, we started using the computers to capture all that data, sort it, and allow you to go look at it, which was not as easy to do with the tech back then. But you could go look up Sydney or Julie's transaction from Saturday and see, oh yeah, they bought that stuff. And they, you know, when they got home or whatever, they, you know, turned out they were missing something. And you could have a dialogue about that based on a digital footprint. We take it for granted now. Didn't used to be the case. Paper used to be the record, but paper's no longer there. I bet you probably both do your taxes with a lot of digital stuff, not a stack of paper, right? So we've come a long way, but there's a whole nother, you know, new horizon in front of us.
Yeah, thanks for humoring us for a bit. That was a great example. And it is interesting to see really just how far the industry has come. And Taking a step back, Chris, the last time you were actually in our guest seat on this podcast, we explored a very bold claim that the POS is dead. And I encourage anyone who missed that episode to go back and take a listen. I think a quick summary will be helpful right here, though. Can you elaborate a little bit deeper on the philosophy behind that statement?
Yeah, it's interesting. Some people are totally on board with it, and some sort of want to take the opposite point of view, which is that's fine, because it's more... It's more about a philosophy than anything else. And my point in saying the POS is dead is kind of exactly what we've been talking about. Thinking of your POS as a glorified calculator, and thinking that the focal point of your restaurant is pushing the buttons on that POS and that's the most important thing, is just no longer true. That was super important 30 years ago. In fact, it was a big advancement 30 years ago to be able to do complex combo ordering on a computer instead of on a mechanical register. But we've had that for a long time now. And really, all of the platforms in the industry have an adequate POS for the most part. There may be slight differences in their UIs and, you know, how great they are at drive-through speed of service or whatever, but it's relatively small. What's more important is what's going on behind the POS. How is the platform managing the transactions, moving them around, helping the entire rooftop operate well in the kitchen with the consumers, communicating out to third parties outside of the rooftop, delivery drivers, the consumers waiting for delivery drivers. There's now people all over the place that are a part of a restaurant transaction. Didn't used to be the case. It was the person standing in front of another person at the POS, no longer the case. And so when I say the POS is dead, my point is that 95% of your technology that you need has nothing to do with somebody standing in front of somebody punching buttons on a POS. It's managing all these other constituents. And in fact, we, I think, all know that, you know, more than 60% of transactions today are not happening on a POS. They're coming from somewhere else. So I think the POS, maybe the POS isn't dead, but it's kind of frozen in time, and other things are now more important.
I don't know. I think I'm ready to let the POS of the early 2000s rest in peace. You know, the reality of our world is that it is just much more complex than that. And so, you know, with that, definitely operators like, you know, brands like Revel, we kind of celebrated that. For the first time, restaurants started to really embrace accelerated tech and at much higher speeds than they were used to. Really a bummer that it was a pandemic that helped drive that. But, you know, in terms of some of the other benefits that it unlocked, that is a small win that we were able to carry forward. So, but I think what we're seeing today, you know, just with all of that consumer choice and the demand for those choices, there's pros and cons to having so much more for merchants to wade through. And so I'd love to get your perspective on both of those, the pros and the cons.
Yep. Well, let's start with the pro. Okay, we could do that in either direction, but let's start with the pro. I'm a glass half full kind of guy. Here's the best thing, the really good thing about the pandemic. It would have, you know how in your own life, sometimes you know you need to change on something. You know, well, let's use a couple of classic examples, right? You want to go on a diet or you want to exercise more. It generally does not work for you to think about it just a little bit this week, the next week, then the week after, and kind of, and oh, I'll start a little bit and, you know, do a little here and a little there. That's usually not, it usually just dribbles away and you never actually execute it, right? You usually tackle something like that when you get really serious about it, or there's some big external factor, you know, maybe you've got a health concern, or I know a classic one, I'll use the example, but when, you know, I know in my family, when somebody's having a wedding, suddenly everybody wants to go on a diet to hit a goal before the wedding, right? So you are driven by some event to do something. The pandemic drove everybody to do something. If it hadn't been for the pandemic, the same things would have happened over a longer period of time, but they would have been more harmful because nobody would have done anything about them. So now people do realize they need tech. And the most important thing that's happened is they realize that with costs going up and the way the economy is changing, they need to run a more complex restaurant. The good news is, here's the great news about all this. Now in a restaurant in the same rooftop, and I've got an example right down the street from my house, during the pandemic, they were brilliant. They pivoted quickly. And within weeks, they were building family meals that you could order online on their website. A truck pulled up every day. And from 5 to 7 o'clock, you could pick up your box with a meal for a family of 3 or 4 or 6 or 8. And it was paid for online. And they were still moving product through that place. They also, when the pandemic got a little further in, guess what? They built a huge patio in their parking lot. They eventually covered it, and it is now, to this day, permanently doubled the size of this restaurant. So this restaurant in February of 2020 did one thing. People showed up and ate inside the building at a certain number, let's say at 20 tables. Today, that restaurant does active takeout service outside the doors, both takeout and delivery, and has twice as many tables because they have a permanent patio that's beautiful and that people love to sit on. Their business is 3 times as big as it was before. So that's the good news in all of this, is that restaurants actually, if they do it right, there's a lot of opportunity to build a bigger business. And of course, you partly need that bigger business to offset the costs, but not entirely. I suspect that business is now making more money than it ever did. So that's a success story and really what everybody needs to emulate here. I think the con side of it is exactly the opposite story. It's the person who hasn't figured out how to get the right tech stack in to do all those things. Maybe there are some constraints they can't control themselves. There's not extra space for a patio. Their product's not conducive to takeout. So there are legitimate reasons why people could be sort of trapped in the old way of doing things. And you do have to have the time and capital and some of the skills on your team to engage in getting the tech stacks in to do all these things. So I'm not saying it's easy by any stretch, but it can be done. And there's plenty of examples out there of people who are building healthier long-term businesses that are meeting consumers in all the ways they want. And they're actually bigger businesses than they ever were in the old days.
Yeah, this perfectly ties into what I wanted to ask you next, Chris, which is about the best of breed approach to merchant technology versus the all-in-one approach. And in the face of complex operations that merchants face today, which you just named quite a few of them, what are the key differences between these two technology philosophies?
Yeah, well, I think let's make sure people understand that first of all. So best of breed really means buying a core platform, what we used to call POS, that runs all your transactions and runs the core of the shop. But then choosing, what do you want to use for loyalty? What do you want to use for, for your online ordering? You know, what other partners do you want to bring in? Who do you want to bring in to do your accounting and your back office? Maybe inventory. So the different pieces of the puzzle. That, I think, in a world where technology is advancing quickly and there's going to be new things coming. I mentioned the list earlier, but I'll do it again. Vision, voice, AI. People are doing amazing things now. I mean, how to throttle your kitchen, you know, on Friday and Saturday night so that you're making food for the most profitable segment of your customers. You don't want your kitchen 90% full of DoorDash when you've got people sitting in tables buying alcohol from you, right? But that you actually need some technology intelligence to do that well. You don't want to just turn DoorDash off. That might be shorting your business. So it needs to be throttled at the right level. So there's a lot of tech coming into play, and there's no way one provider could keep up with building or even acquiring all the technology to deliver all those things to you. So I think in a world where there's a lot of tech coming into play, best of breed, especially for businesses who have enough staff, this would typically be chains, that they can bring that in They can bring a platform in and then pick the things that best fit their business that are out there is really good. I think the place that non-best of breed fits in best, where you take kind of the basic versions of all those things from one provider, is if you're truly an independent shop, you've got limited resources, limited capital, you don't need to be bleeding edge, then, you know, just take the core stuff, make it work well. And I think that's more than suitable. But if you're going to be a growing chain business, you've got to have the ability to see the next technology. And you might see one technology might not be a great fit for your business, but then the next one you see a couple months later to show might be something that could transform your business. And you want to be able to plug that in as quickly as you can. So I think that's where best of breed comes into play.
Yeah. And I kind of want to really explore how Revel arrived at that approach. You know, here we are, we're chatting with our chief strategy officer. So, you know, some providers do still kind of lead with an all-in-one tactic. How is it that, and there's merits to that, you know, that's definitely, it can be simpler. It can be cheaper depending on what you actually need to turn on or where you're seeing, you know, the most demand and revenue potential for your business, especially if you are one of those smaller players. But certainly for brands that are looking to scale or are interested in exploring some of the latest, greatest to the scene, can you walk us through how Revel like landed at that best of breed approach philosophy internally as the priority and how we were going to continue to build out our own technology offerings?
Yeah, it's a great question, Sydney. And I'll say this from the get-go. I'm not sure. It's not like one's right and one's wrong. They're just different and they fit different parts of the market. So a lot of it's just a choice. And don't forget, Revel was actually the very first cloud-based system. So where they came from was fundamentally a place of, oh, wow, this sort of leapfrog technology that allows you to have less boxes in the store. It's easier to get systems in place. And it's fundamentally easier to plug in with cloud technology than it is any kind of on-prem technology or older architecture. So we saw early on that that could be an advantage that we would have. Now, many other systems have come along that are also fully cloud-based. Some systems are out there that are still some kind of hybrid. But we had that sort of in our DNA. And I would also say that we lean towards being a product first company, and other companies might choose to do that differently. They might be all about, we're about this segment of the market or whatever, but we're a product first company. And we knew that we wanted to have the best platform in the space. And therefore, by definition, we couldn't have the best X and Y and Z and Q and R. We actually do have some of the base modules for things like loyalty and other things for our system for smaller customers. But really, our sweet spot is the bigger customers, because we've got an architecture that from day one until this day is very plug-inable and scalable in a best-of-breed approach. So it's just where we started, and our, you know, and that's therefore, you know, kind of always been the strategy. And you know, I don't see us changing that for now. We also, I think we're also big believers that there are better people to be specialists in other areas. So that's just a, you know, but again, it's a choice we're making. We know we're not, Square is a completely different product. I mean, I'm not sure. Yes, there are some cases where we have customers that overlap or somebody goes from Square to Revel or what, but in many ways, there's almost nothing. We are so different. I mean, it's like a boat in a car, you know, they're both transportation vehicles, but they're not the same thing at all. And that's actually a very good example. Square is a great product for a small independent operator that wants to do the basic things across the board that needs minimal training. But if you want to start to do anything sophisticated and you want to do it across multiple sites and regions and scale it and you want to plug in other cool technologies, that, you know, that's a Revel capability and something that Square, who's a boat, would never be interested in doing.
Right. Well, and as much as we love a thoughtful philosophy, there's also actual data to support the shift that we've really been seeing with Revel clients in terms of embracing this best of breed approach. Namely, API calls to our platform are up more than 300% if you compare them to 10 years ago. So what does that figure signal to you, Chris?
Well, like you said, Julie, it's just, A, it's evidence. I'm also going to tell you, I bet that we hit that 300% number again in like 3 more years instead of 10 years, which speaks to the acceleration. In fact, we should measure it again in like a year and see if, because it's definitely, what you call the old hockey stick graph, right? It's just taking off like crazy. There's such cool stories about what some of our customers are already doing, you know, with different types of technology, and it's exciting, and we're thrilled to enable that. So that's the hardcore evidence is just there, and it's not going to slow down. The other thing that's happening that's going to drive this is, it used to be, and it's pretty easy to follow this example, I think, 10-ish years ago, certainly 15 or 20, there wasn't as much of these integrations. But when they were, an integration would come to your system like once a day, like, oh, give me the totals at the end of the day to feed the back office and the inventory, or maybe a few time check-in points for labor scheduling or something, like give me the sales every hour. Okay, that was just, think about, okay, we're going to hit the system a few times a day. Now, a lot of these technologies, they want to know every time a transaction happens and what's going on. They want to engage at a transaction level. So, you know, we have one customer using Vision to watch their prep line. In the Vision, they actually have their condiments are all in a fixed position. And the Vision knows if the consumer said, I want lettuce, tomato, but no mayo, the Vision knows whether it got prepped right or not. And it stops them with a red light if they got it wrong before the consumer's got a burger in a bag that's the wrong thing that they're going to have to bring back. It costs some money, it costs some time, it costs some customer dissatisfaction. But that's talking to our system every transaction, you know. So that means constantly all day, hundreds and hundreds of times per site per day. And we're going to see more and more of this kind of stuff. Like I mentioned, the throttling in the kitchen, that's a real time thing. So this is the new world order. This is why compute power keeps getting gobbled up. This is why NVIDIA's stock is going through the roof. This is all because technology allows you to do a lot more stuff. And it's clear in the numbers.
It's really so cool to see what's even possible today, largely through tech. I mean, and on the flip side, that can also let folks kind of spend more time in like R&D. Maybe they're coming up with cooler new offerings to put in front of that, you know, Vision line for different condiments and things. And so it's kind of had an especially neat interplay with the hospitality space. So let's say just, you know, because there's also so much that you can do with that, almost like a frightening amount of limitless possibility. Let's say you were talking with a friend and they're a restaurant or retail operations person looking to make a change to their tech stack. What advice would you share with that friend on the key factors to look for as they're just weighing their options?
You know, I think there's a cool thing about this industry, something that just, you know, the part I love about it, it at the end of the day is still, it's a hospitality industry. It's about service and the experience. The tech should kind of be in the background most of the time. Yeah, a consumer may go to an online ordering site. But other than that, if you think about a restaurant that you engage with, you don't really want to see it. You just want all the right stuff to happen super smoothly. And I think if I was talking to a friend, I would say, what are you trying to accomplish at your site? And by the way, chains are very different. Some, it's all about speed, right? It's like, my people want to get through the drive-through window ASAP. Other places, it's around you know, a service element, obviously more table service, but even in some quick service places, it's a different mentality. They want high quality food that's hot. You know, what are your priorities as a business? Just like we have to pick our strategy and our focus, they've got to pick who they want. What do they want to be great at? And then I'd say, make sure that when you're approaching your tech decisions, you're thinking through, how can I accomplish that? And where am I probably going to be going in the next couple of years? And how can I accomplish the things I want to accomplish? And if you need best of breed stuff, if you think some of these kind of cool capabilities that are coming along are going to be important to, you know, grab and plug in, then you need a best of breed solution. If you really think that that's, you know, not where you're headed, if you're not going to be a growing chain and you're very focused on something more, you know, kind of, I just need to have the tech get my transactions done, but not a lot more, you could potentially go the other way. But I think even the best of breed stuff is going to creep further and further down market, because as you know, what happens with consumers, once they see something working one place, they're going to want it everywhere, right? So it's the same thing that happened in March of 2020. You know, only 20 or 30% of the market had online ordering, and 3 months later, it was 90%. So when somebody figures out that there's some, if voice ordering takes off at the drive-through, you're going to be frustrated when you go to a drive-through that doesn't have it. So my advice is, you better get ready for what's coming. And that probably means getting to a place where you can plug stuff in.
Yeah, I think ultimately the best of breed approach helps you not get left behind. When you go to your friend's business, you don't want to be jealous.
Took me 30 minutes to say that.
You said there you go. And Chris, at this time, as we kind of approach the end, I want to shift to more of a forward focus. And with that, what do you believe will be the next big thing for the restaurant and retail technology and our industry as a whole?
Yeah, great question. I wish I had that crystal ball. I actually don't think it's a thing, because I think we already saw the thing. The thing was this technology acceleration period. I mean, it's just a totally different world right now. So I think what we're going to see is more uniqueness, and, you know, chains are going to have the ability to really solve specific problems in really cool ways. So I don't think, like, you've heard some of my examples already, but this is no breakthrough kind of thing to say, but voice at the drive-through, whatever, there's a lot of potential here. But I think what's going to happen is that stuff like AI and ML, machine learning, is going to come in and make the restaurant smarter. And so whatever the focus is of your restaurant, the tech's going to allow them to take care of you as a consumer just that much better. And I hope that's what happens, because that would be really cool, right? If we can have even more awesome experiences because the tech's going to remove problems, friction, time, you know, wasted energy. I want the energy with all the people I engage with at a restaurant to be on my food and me. I want the rest of the energy to go away as much as possible. And so, you know, whether that's a robot who's doing the fryer or whatever it takes to get there, that's what's going to be cool. So I actually hope we may be in a weird situation, Julie, where we've kind of had probably, we're headed into this more complex restaurant world where there's more things going on at the rooftop. In some ways, consumers for a while, the last couple of years, have probably seen some choppiness in service and things like that with the adjustment. But I think over time, once it gets figured out and once all the tech gets applied, we might have the best restaurant experiences we've ever had in our lives, because the restaurant is kind of running itself in the background and the people are freed up to provide incredible experiences. So that's what I think is the real upside here. And it's not any one thing. It's a whole list of things that are going to make that happen, that make the restaurant smarter.
It's going to be really interesting to see where we go. And Chris, we've covered the past, present, and future in this episode. So I just really appreciate your willingness to time hop with us. And at this point in the show, I want to make sure that if there's anything that we have not addressed on the topic of restaurant technology, best of breed solutions, all-in-one solutions, or anything just generally on your mind that we check in with you before we officially close things out.
No, I think it was a great discussion. It is undeniably exciting times in this industry. So that I think is really cool, and it was fun to talk about it. And I think sometimes you can easily get in the frame of mind that this is like complexity and challenges and more stuff to do. It's all stuff that's going to lead us in the right direction. So that's really cool.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time today and sharing just a sampling of all the transformations you've had the chance to witness in our industry and a little look at what you think's ahead as well. We appreciate it.
I don't know about you, Julie, but this episode has me in the mindset of possibilities. What an awesome conversation with Chris about the many changes in the industry throughout the years and with some extra acceleration as of late.
I'm right there with you. What an exciting time to be a hospitality operator. And while technology is unlikely the reason most people enter this industry, it has some really neat implications for where the industry is headed next.
So as we daydream of technology and maybe something that will place our delivery orders before we even realize we're hungry or pinpoint the cuisine of our next craving, I'm really ready for that one. I'd like to extend a heartfelt thank you to all of the listeners who tuned into this episode. Make sure you never miss new podcast content by liking and subscribing to Restaurant and Retail Revelations on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back soon with even more revelations.